What is it about skeletons that scares us? I mean, we all essentially are a skeleton. There's nothing that could be possibly more similar to us than the idea of a human skeleton. It is what makes us. You know, it's our most basic structure. But the idea of seeing it with the skin off, it's a image of horror, of terror, of being scared. Is it a reminder of our mortality? Is it something deeper? Why is it such a spooky proposition when it's something that we all, you know, you can feel your bones in your arm. You can, it's you. Why is it us on a deeper level that seems to scare us so much? It's an interesting question. And once we're gone, and once all that's left of us is that skeleton, are we still connected to it? Even though the flesh and the matter that was once surrounding all those bones are gone, are we still part of that? That skeleton still there, or is that just a shell of what we once were? Do we want to stay with that skeleton? It's an interesting question, and one actually that gets asked in one of our stories today on EPP bonus episode number 339 of Real Ghost Stories Online. Somebody brings home a skeleton, because who doesn't, you know? This was in the 30s. It was a little more acceptable back then. You'll find out why. Also, sometimes it's a place that's haunted. Sometimes it's a person. Sometimes it's both. One woman tries to figure out what the answer to that riddle is with her boyfriend. And is the spirit of a man who took his own life haunting the halls of a home? Or is it the residual energy of just that replaying over and over all by itself, tormenting those who live in that home today? Three great stories for you today on EPP bonus episode number 339 of Real Ghost Stories Online. My name's Tony Brisky. Stay with us. The idea of having a body in your home, it's not really a common one. I mean, it's one thing if, you know, you have a family member who passes away unexpectedly, then yes, the body's going to be there until it can be taken away and gone to a proper location, you know, for what happens, getting ready for burial and all of that. But the idea of willingly bringing a body into a home, that's typically something we only see on crime shows. You know, watch a little Investigation Discovery, it happens all the time. But, healthy individuals, not always. However, here's the crux of it. Go back in time, go back to the 1930s. How do you think one may get a body into their home and it not be a crime? Did you ever think of a medical professional or someone studying in that field and the skeletons that used to be in classrooms and all sorts of places of medical study? Those are real skeletons. Those were, yes, they were real. It was before the days of plastic and manufactured ones. It was more common that one could possibly have in their possession a full-blown skeleton, a body of a human being in their house. Yeah, could happen. It did happen. It is a surprising thing to many folks who, if they're going through a grandparents or great-grandparents things, suddenly it's like, why? This is a really authentic looking skeleton up here in the attic. Oh, wait. There's a reason it's so authentic. Would you ever wonder if maybe a body like that holds something to it? If it's just being used just kind of so, you know, leisurely, is there something attached to that? There's rumors of skeletons and skeletal remains used in rides and such all over the country at various amusement parks and legends associated. And it makes you wonder there, too. If your remains still hold an energy or piece of you that continues to live on well after you've passed. Seems to happen in our next story. Take a listen. This is my grandmother's ghost story. I heard her tell this story from time to time while I was growing up. It should be noted that Grandmom did not especially like to share this story, but with enough pleading and prodding from our grandchildren, she'd have a sigh of defeat and stop what she was doing to tell us her ghost story. My grandparents were both from Italy, but they met and married in Philadelphia near the beginning of the 20th century. When I say they met, what I mean is that they were paired together as a suitable couple by Grandmom's older brother. That's the way it was done back then. Grandpop tailored fine suits at Botany 500, and Grandmom was an accomplished seamstress. It was a good match. I do not remember my grandfather, as he died when I was quite young, but Grandmom lived well into her 90s and resided at my childhood home for the last 15 years or so of her life. When I reached my full adult height of 5'4", I towered over this quintessential little old lady. To me, she was always a little old lady who would fish a wrapped Starlight mint out from her pocket every now and then and give it to me with a knowing look. It was a secret just between us, and no one else in my big family would ever be the wiser. Of course, she was sneaking wrapped Starlight mints to all my siblings, too, and we all knew it, but just the same, it was touching in a comical way. All the pictures that I've seen of Grandmom in her youth indicated she was never clearing 5 feet in height. However, her youthful photos did show a more robust figure. Not fat, mind you, but sturdy for sure. Grandfather and grandmother were hardworking immigrants and were prosperous by the standard of the day. They had 5 children and instilled in all of them a high principle of family, religion, education, and work ethic. I understood that life was good there in South Philadelphia the day Grandma saw the ghost. The backstory, as Grandmom told it, always began with a single sentence. Pascal was at Hahnemann, and he brought home bones, she'd begin. Pascal was my Uncle Pat, and everyone called him Pat except for Grandmom. We all knew what Hahnemann was because Dad would go on a study at Hahnemann, too. It was the prestigious Hahnemann Medical College and Hospital, where Uncle Pat was a medical student. And the bones he brought home were neither random nor few. No, Uncle Pat had brought home an entire human skeleton. A real skeleton that Grandmom offhandedly called the bones. Grandmom would elaborate on the bones, earnestly telling us that she never wanted them in her house. It seemed sacrilegious. It was bad. No good could come of it. She even demanded that Pascal put them out on the roof whenever he was not using those bones to study. Eventually, they came to an agreement. Pascal would keep the bones in his closet, and his mother never had to see them. But, Grandmom would say, I knew they were there. Such was life on November 2nd in the mid-1930s, the day Grandmom saw the ghost. We know it was November 2nd because November 2nd is All Souls Day. And All Souls Day is the day that Grandmom lit the candles for the dead. The day began like any other day. Grandmom would tell us, Innocent went to work, Pascal went to Hahnemann, Joe went to Villanova and the girls. Grandmom would lift her shoulders and spread her arms in typical Italian conclusion. They went to school. Grandmom would go on to itemize all the things that she did that day. There were things that she did every day, but somehow her recounting of them for us put us there with her in our minds. We were there with her as she made the beds, tidied up the house. We were there while she had a short phone conversation with her recently married daughter, Mary, and as she went to the Italian market to get things for dinner. But it was November 2nd, and it was All Souls Day. On this day, Grandmom would tell us, matter-of-factly, I had to light the candles for the dead. She would go on to describe getting out the tray and the candles and setting them up on the dining room table. We listened and imagined how she lit each candle and said out loud for whom the candle was lit. I lit a candle for my mother. I lit a candle for my father. And she recited an endless list of dead relatives and friends until she came to an end and had one candle left. So I said, I am lighting this candle for the soul who is in my son's closet, she'd tell us. Then she described saying some prayers before leaving the dining room for the kitchen to start dinner preparations. We knew it was coming next. Grandma was going to tell us now how a very ordinary day turned into a day that she would never forget. I was cooking dinner when I heard someone upstairs, and she would tell us, I was mad, she'd say. She was mad because obviously someone had come home and didn't have the decency to pop into the kitchen and let her know they were there before going upstairs. I say he because Grandma had immediately settled on it being one of her sons. She always got a little agitated when she told this part of the story. Apparently, it was not only customary to announce your homecoming, it was expected. The very idea that one of her sons had come home early and went straight upstairs without saying hello was a violation of the highest order. She went to the bottom of the steps and called out, Joe, Pascal, who's up there? But there was no answer. There was just more moving around upstairs. This added insult to injury. Not only had one of her sons come home early and did not say hello, now that son was upstairs and not answering her. So I went back into the kitchen and got the wooden spoon. As comical as it sounds, I assure you that Grandmom, in her time, if an Italian woman had a wooden spoon in her hand and she wasn't stirring spaghetti sauce with it, someone was in big trouble. Up the steps she went, wooden spoon in hand, to teach the culprit a lesson he wouldn't soon forget. I was going up the stairs when I heard a whoosh, she'd continue. At this point, Grandma would stand and try to replicate exactly what she had seen. She'd move quickly and wave her arms up and down purposefully, like a bird in flight. The whoosh went into Pascal's room. It was at that moment that Grandma knew that it wasn't either one of her sons she was after. It was the bones. But she still had her wooden spoon, and now she was furious that the bones were trying to scare her in her own home. I went to the door and tried to open it, but someone was holding the door shut from the inside, she'd say. In the retelling, she'd go to the door and mimic what happened. It was this way, she'd say, pretending to try to open a door that she couldn't open. By then, she'd tell us she had had enough. So I shouted, don't you come and scare me. I lit a candle for you, so you leave me alone. This is my house, and I'm coming in there, so go away. Suddenly, she was able to open the door, and as the bedroom door swung open, she saw the whoosh one more time moving into the closet. That's where we're going to pause the preview portion of EPP bonus episode number 339 of Real Ghost Stories Online. Thank you guys for listening thus far. If you want to hear the rest of the stories, become a supporter of the show, an extra podcast person, sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. It's only $5 a month to get access to all of the bonus episodes. You get access to the largest audio archive of ghost stories ever created. That's what we have with this show. You get all of that. You get advanced episodes of the show weeks before the release to the public, all commercial free. Our ebook, our audiobook, it's all there. That's a $30 value right there if you bought it through Amazon or through Audible. We include that with the membership. $5 a month. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. And thank you in advance for your support of Real Ghost Stories Online.